running a food museum here. Why can't you just go buy fresh ice cream?
We haven't even tried it. You're making fun of the ice cream and you haven't even tasted it. It's wonderful, Sherbert.
I don't want it. I'm not going to taste it.
No?
I don't
you
want it.
You tell
I
me.
God, this is horribly old. This tastes like an orange foot.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 59 for the week of February 16th, 2015. I am your waiter tonight, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Hote Cookie, Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm grumbling.
Sharpest knife in the block, Tara Arietto.
Pack me and go.
And meathead Jeff Drake.
Pad my Lakshmi, pad your own Lakshmi.
Welcome to episode 59 of the podcast. We have a very exciting dual lead
point
topic.
Point of order.
Yes.
What the hell is that, Sarah?
I'm melting.
Oh.
I'm melting. I'm crumbling.
Wow.
That's good.
Yep.
We have an exciting.
Wow. It's already over.
Dual lead topic, two reality shows. And since both of them are currently being covered by the same gentleman, we have him on. Jeff Drake, welcome back.
Hi, thank you.
Welcome.
From beautiful Thanks. Santa Barbara.
Yes, that's correct.
So let's get into it. Top Chef finale. Oh, I guess I have to say the last phrase that doesn't pay was guessed. It was Hershey Kisses.
Guessed by Moo Moo Chainsmoker.
Yes, it was repeated in three episodes. She finally got it. So there's a new phrase that doesn't pay starting with this episode.
By the way, Moo Moo Chainsmoker is an excellent username.
It really is. Yeah. Right, so let's go. Jeff, you've been covering Top Chef all season. Yeah. What did you think of the finale? Were you happy with the results?
I was very happy with the results because, you know, first of all, the season was way too long. It's 15 episodes long.
Yeah, that's
and that
too
was,
much.
That was ridiculous. But the main thing is, one of the reasons they made it too long was they had an episode where the family members came back and they were like, and nobody goes home this week. And it's like, why are we wasting time with this then?
Yeah.
And that was the episode that Gregory did horribly, and he would have gone home had there been an elimination.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, at the end, because he cooked his protein poorly, which is like Tom Colicchio is like bitch, go home. Like he is never happy with that. He's like, you can make a lot of different mistakes, but if you cook your protein poorly, no matter what protein it is, Tom is like offended.
Mm-hmm.
And he cooked his protein badly, and they just joked about it. Like, ha, I guess you might have gone home if somebody was going home.
Mm.
And so then it was the two of them. It was him versus May at the end. And like, if he had won, I would have really felt like that was an injustice because he did terribly in that episode. Like I'm sorry that you're covering for your family member, your sister who's there, and you made her dish well. Because the family members had to cook a dish also. But It's like, I don't know, that just the protracted nature of this season has just been incredibly trying.
Yeah.
You know?
I kind of wish when they had moments like that, that there was some transparency with like how they judge things and that you would know that, like, you know, as if there were like skating judges and they've given numbers and you know the numbers, right? And there was like some sort of like seasonal tally to it. And I realize why they don't, because if they actually do that and are honest with themselves and they have like a superstar, they'll win by episode four. But somewhere where you can actually see, and like, I would like to see a show where instead of there being like two people and like who's going to be, you know, kicked off and who will eke by another week, there's actually like, well, you got three and you got 3.1. So sorry, three, you're out. Like, I feel like there's so many reality shows now that there's actually a white space in that universe for the air quotes honest competition reality show judging method, you know?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like the judging is always whatever it is, you know.
Well, the thing about Top Chef is why I think that the crazy Dave Cole numerical judging transparency method would work is that on that show, the judges are like you depend on the judges to be your taste bud surrogate. More like, and that's like a different ball of wax from most other shows.
Different than watching Project Runway, where, like,
where you see,
you can witness it with your own eyes.
Right. And yeah. I feel like if I saw some stuff like, you know, like the Omami score was 7.8 and, you know, the texture was this and that, at least I would understand more why somebody is under somebody else when it's so subjective. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. you can't, like, there's no program where as you're watching it, Bravo will, you know, expedite ship you the meal so that you can taste it at the same time. Although, you know, if somebody wants to take that on, that would be kind of awesome.
So, Jeff, obviously, based on your commentary, Gregory was not your favorite, but was May among your favorites?
May, she absolutely was from the beginning. I mean, my problem with Gregory was just that, like, I feel like when May fell short in the competition, it was because she just honestly, like, fucked something up.
Yeah.
Like, she, like, tried to do something and she screwed up. Gregory, I feel like, on several occasions, like, phoned it in. And yeah. was like, you know what, I'm just going to do this thing that I'm comfortable with. And they kind of let him get away with it because obviously his food was amazing. I have no doubt that he's a great chef. But it's like, it just really, like, I just felt like I felt like she was trying harder mm-hmm. in a way, you know. And but I mean, from the beginning, I was like, these were, you know, I went back and I looked at, you know, the very first episode, the top three were the two of them plus, you know, dead author, Doug Adams.
Right.
And, you know, looking great for being dead 13 years. And who knew he could cook? But, you know, so he, like, they end up, like, those are three of the, you know, those are the final three, and they were in the top at the very beginning.
Right.
And I sort of thought from the beginning, these are really good chefs, and it was exciting to watch them cook. But, like, you know, I mean, was it Blankenship who wrote about stop bringing contestants back?
Yes.
Yes. He is so on point, especially with this show, because, like, who cares about, like, stop trying to make me watch Last Chance Kitchen. Yeah. I'm not going to watch it.
Yeah.
It's like, it reminded me too much of, like, growing up and I'm, like, reading the X-Men comic. And then it's like, oh, now there's just here, this whole Morlock story. So make sure to pick up the next issue of Thor. It's like, I don't want to read Thor.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I don't. Like, it's poorly drawn. I don't, like, I don't, I hate that character.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to have, like, two pages of this story in it. But, like, I had to buy it because I'm like, what's happening with this story?
Yeah.
And so it's like, I just, like, stop making me try to watch that. And also, it's just like.
But you didn't, you know, did you?
No, I didn't.
That'll show
up. Of course not. I mean, but it's like. But then it's just like, well, what's the point of these last, like, 2 months of it where it's like, oh, somebody was in it, now they're back, they're out of it, now they're back in it. And it's like, it's just like, just like, you know, like.
Well, it just poisons the main one, because, like, the Tim Gunn save, once they've saved someone, and I think this was true of Super Soaker George.
Yeah.
That once they've saved the person, they feel obligated to, like, make things play out so that it looks like a good call.
Yeah.
Right.
And it justifies its own existence. And they're really not as cagey about that as they think they are, is A. And then B is my, like, constant stalking horse with competition judging on reality shows, which is be more transparent about whether you're actually sending them home for this challenge only every time, or whether past performance counts, and don't change it depending on whether you want your favorite Gregory, who was a clear favorite from jump.
Oh, yeah.
Say.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And also, go ahead, Jeff.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, like, on that same thing, like, the people, I'd, honestly, I've lost my train of thought.
Well, let me jump in on that, because boy, Jeff, do I ever? I feel you. No, when you're talking about, you know, like, the bringing back old contestants and all that kind of stuff, like, you remember back when, like, Survivor first started, it was pretty much, you know, elimination every week and blah blah blah. And then there's, like, this gimmick arms race with all the reality shows where, you know, every year they added a little something until, like, and especially like a show like Amazing Race now, where if you haven't been watching it all along, you go back and watch it and there's like all these new crazy rules. And, yeah, you know, like there's the double U-turn, you know, negaverse slap
or Vitor Jersey jug handle. Yeah.
Yeah.
The worst is Big Brother.
They're where totally it's like, add that now too.
And at this point, it's so baroquely complicated on Big Brother. Yeah. It's like, I don't even understand
and
what I'm watching.
Again, I feel like, you know, much like there is a white space for honest judging, I feel like now there's a white space for the show that just is what it should be, you know, what it says on the tin, right? Yeah. Like, even especially for a show like Survivor, how the hell do you justify a show called Survivor where one of the people who dies gets to come back?
Gets to go to Redemption Island.
Yeah, like, dumb. Like, yeah, it's an oxymoron. You know,
guys, I have very exciting news.
Oh, did you remember?
I remember.
Yay!
For me, it's like as if you get to like the NBA playoffs,
right?
And somebody gets
sports metaphor.
Up. Yep,
heard of it.
Okay, go to sleep, Dave.
Okay,
go to sleep, Tara. So it's like somebody gets knocked out in the first round. Some team gets knocked out, and they're terrible in the first round. But then there's a whole like secret like playoffs that happen just online. And that team that got knocked out in the first round somehow ends up winning that, and they end up in the championship game because of it. It's like, what? Like, I don't care how they cook after they got eliminated.
Right, exactly.
You blew it.
Yeah.
Like, good Lord.
Yeah. Speaking about blowing it, shall we shift gears and talk about our other reality show, The Bachelor?
Oh, please.
Now, can I just start off?
Before you get into it, we just want to say Jeff Drake, our guest today, has taken over covering The Bachelor because now it can be told, since she announced in her last post, Stephanie Green, who has been covering the whole Bachelor franchise for basically since the site has existed, just had a baby. So that's why she is handing it off to the extremely able Jeff Drake. So please proceed, Dave. What are you saying?
How the fuck do you people watch this show? It just went on forever. And it was so... just wanted to reach into the TV and kill things.
Especially
and
last
Hulk
night.
Hulk smash. And
3 hours
said.
Is extremely self-indulgent. I don't care if you're trying to counter-program 3.5 hours. Actually, it was 4.5 hours of the SNL 40.
You know special. I don't like reality shows generally, as a rule. But damn, this show... I forgot. Like, I ended up watching it once every year or two
for the purposes podcast, of this podcast.
For this podcast. And I forget how terrible it is and how angry it makes me.
Yeah.
And I know that it's a big show in the Drake household.
It is. I mean, I had a funny conversation with a friend of mine at lunch, and he watches it with his girlfriend, but he's like way more invested in like the ladies of The Bachelor, like who's going to win and who's got this and that. And so he was like talking about, well, like being on the show will really increase this person's like, you know, ability to date or whatever. And I was like, I was like, with whom?
With whom?
I was like, there's not a single guy who's watching this show.
No.
Like, a guy is watching this show who's married or engaged or living with his girlfriend, and they watch it together. Single guys aren't watching it going like, hey, if that girl doesn't end up with The Bachelor, I'm going to give her a call.
Yeah.
Sitting there with his on-the-market checklist watching the show.
I mean, there must be some, right? There must be like 25 every year because they just cast them all to be on The Bachelorette with whatever loser craps out on The Bachelor.
Yeah.
And so on
I mean, but by this point, everybody who's going on The Bachelor or The Bachelorette is just trying to be the next Bachelor or The Bachelorette.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a weird metagame. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was like however many seasons back, 7, 8, 9, I forget. It was a while back. They started doing this. Like, they didn't do it from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
They used to go out and try to find somebody, but then they realized, oh, we can cast somebody from the previous season.
Yeah.
People are invested, and it was genius. Like, that's why – otherwise, I think the show would have died off.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, the show. I mean, the show is interminably long. There's no reason why it needs to be any longer than an hour.
No.
I mean, ideally 45 minutes and then 15 minutes of just like, you know, pictures of puppies playing or something. I mean, there is maybe 40 minutes of content.
There's a crazy amount of filler. I mean, before we even started, because we watched the Chris Tells All first, and there were 3 full minutes of previouslys that we fast forwarded through before they even started.
Yeah.
And speaking about those previouslys, we still never
found out how those women got out of the desert. And the show was cheerfully like, and he left them standing there in the Black Hills of South Dakota. And it's that like, was... so. And someone dropped a unicycle and they shared it to get, what the fuck happened?
They're dead. Honestly, that was, that may be my favorite moment ever was like, I was like, he's walking to the helicopter. He's just going to get in and leave them, just the two of them who hate each other in the Badlands on a bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like,
they were both standing on different like levels of the Black Hills and it looked fake. It looked like really a color form.
I was so bored by the show that I took that one moment in the previouslys for about an hour on Twitter and just did this like picture essay about what happened to those people. Like, first they discover the skeletons, and then the skeletons become friends, and then a little bit more than friends, and then they get at an ABC sitcom about a wacky, you know, neighbor, and then they go to the movies and the Cannibal Run thing, and eventually they re-die, and then in the future they come back as robot skeletons to rule the world in Bachelor World 2028.
Well, speaking of someone who hasn't been watching this whole season, I was glad that they started with the Kelsey interview so that I could join the rest of America in hating her guts. Wow, she's horrible.
She's just flat out. She's flat out like crazy. She might have killed her husband.
Yeah.
Like she's like the week that she went bananas. Mm-hmm. Like, it really came out of nowhere. She just seemed like she was just some sort of baseline weirdo.
Yeah.
But then when she had her whole speech about how great her story was and how much she loved her story, it's like, you love the story about your husband dying?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
that's awesome.
By the way, not that long ago. Like, he's pretty freshly dead still.
Sorry, are we talking about the lady who thought the pomegranate was an onion? Is that the same person?
No. Because
she was my favorite.
She is also crazy, but I think she's like, I'm on a lot of drugs crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, where, and my favorite thing about, my favorite thing last night was where Chris Harrison was like, you got to understand, her audition tape was completely normal. And like I said in the column, I was like, yeah, there was nobody had any indication that she was going to be crazy, because why would you want that on your show?
Yeah. Also, they do give everyone psych evaluations before they let them on reality shows. So someone knew she was bonkers.
Oh, yeah.
Also, you can tell.
You can tell from the video that they showed. You totally can.
There's eyelid twitching. I was like, but okay.
Also,
really?
Through the grapevine, without revealing sources, at least in the past, they used to do IQ tests too.
Yes. Well, and that's part of a psych workup.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. I would love to see those.
Oh, yeah. And they give them full, they give them full health things. And apparently, from what we've heard through the grapevine, the most common thing that comes through is just a vast amount of venereal diseases. Mm-hmm.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Shocker.
Okay, so then we actually get to the meat of the episode where Chris is bringing all the ladies back to Iowa.
Yes.
Which they're super excited to do.
Oh my God, everybody was like, get me the fuck out of here.
Even when they were in Des Moines.
Your point,
go ahead,
sorry,
Sarah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I thought Jeff's point in his essay where he's like, and I quoted this to my husband when we were staring at this episode in despair earlier today, that he's like, they were obviously expecting this Hollywood, like Pleasantville, Back to the Future, 50s bustling Hollywood small town experience, not understanding that, you know, this is 400 people, 374 of whom are out of work. Mm-hmm. They don't have their own high school. They don't have their own nail salon. Like, you know, this is real.
Yeah.
And they don't like it. But they're like, where am I going to get, you know, there's no blow dry bar. Ugh. And they're freaking out, which is sort of interesting. Like, it's an interesting premise for the show. But of course, they're not going to do anything genuine with it.
No. And I feel like this is part of the reason why I ended up watching the end of last season of The Bachelorette, because I was at my sister's at the time. So I believe Andy rejected Chris in large part because she was not going to move to Arlington, Iowa. But I also feel like, as I tweeted last night, the catch-22 of this season is that any woman willing to fully pull up stakes and move to the tiniest town in creation where there's going to be zero for her to do is a huge red flag. Like, what is wrong with you that you would consider doing this with someone that you've known for 6 weeks? That's her fucking name, crazy.
Her name, Tara, is Carly.
Okay.
Carly, God bless her. I mean, and I said this on the site, like, she really seriously comes across like possibly the sweetest person who has ever been on this show.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, I mean, she's super damaged. I don't know what happened to her, but she is like,
well, if you like, had to go through life with no upper lip, I'd like to see how you fare.
It's rough. I can't whistle. I can't blow a raspberry. I can't play the trumpet. I can't, like, there's so many things, but I can be a cruise ship singer.
I can think of another thing that could be a problem.
Whoa.
Well, we don't know if those teeth
smoking
are removable
a pipe. Just
well.
What?
I mean, but he's never going to pick Carly. She's already pulled the pin on her grenade.
She already seems pretty resigned to her fate and is just planning to bring Britt down with her. Which, God bless, because Britt seems like a monster.
Oh, but
why
Britt
don't they
is,
ever learn?
Britt is coming
though.
Apart. They never do. Nobody.
It's like, let me talk shit about this
does.
Other girl. Like, yeah. I hope it felt good because it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing as on Top Chef, where like you know, dead author Doug Adams like gets deep into it and he's like, oh, I've been dreading making a dessert. It's like, dreading? How about planning for?
Yeah.
Like, you know it's going to happen. It happens every season.
Yeah.
So plan for it. Mm-hmm. Like, stop pretending like, oh, I didn't know that I was going to go on a one-on-one date in week one and then have to watch him date other women.
I didn't know I needed to know how to make fire, says Survivor contestant.
Yeah. I didn't know how I would have to learn to drive stick. Amazing Race contestant.
Can we talk about then talking about small towns and meltdowns? Let's talk about Britt's crazy post Rose rejection episode.
Oh well.
First, let's talk about our heroes in the Bachelor sound design department who just left sirens in.
I don't think they left sirens in. I think they put them in. I honestly do. I think they put them in.
We actually paused it because we thought it was
outside.
We thought it was in our neighborhood. Yeah. And then we said, your ride's here, like we always do. And then it was like, oh shit, that's not on our block at all. Whoops.
Yeah.
You know, they're only a couple of seasons away from like something like that happens, and then they'll just like somewhere in the background you'll hear, you know, it's like, oh my god, Chewie disapproves.
Yeah.
All right,
that's Britt Meltdown. Superman.
Yeah, okay. I don't think she's gonna win, you guys.
No, I think I literally think it was, like I said, like she was like, I gave the best performance of my life and I don't get a rose.
Yeah.
Like, you know, she's so like, she got here. She got to Arlington. First of all, she got to Des Moines and that was disappointing. Mm-hmm. I get it. I've been to Des Moines. It is disappointing. But like, and then she had to drive 3 hours to get to Arlington. Like, it's a 3-hour drive.
Yeah.
Through nothing.
A 3-hour drive.
Like, I'm from that part of the country, and I played in a band in high school and in college, and we drove to Townsend, Iowa.
Oh, my God, Tara, do you want to talk to Jeff about marching band and traveling?
He wasn't in a marching band. He was in a real cool band.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Dude, I mean, it is, like, it is mind-numbing. It's just flat, and there's nothing there. And like anybody who's like from a remote town and has had to drive elsewhere knows what it's like. Like if you just lived out in like a bustling city or on the East Coast, you've never had to drive that long without seeing anything. And so they drove 3 hours to get to like a speck on a map.
Yeah.
And then 3 hours back. That's 6 hours of your day in a car with people that you don't know or like.
They were at the shots of them being like, oh my God, we're still driving. And then they get to the other end of the street and like, wait, was that it? Like,
yeah,
that they thought they were just on the sad outskirts. Like, no, it's all sad outskirts. That's all there is. There's a bank and a insurance office probably. and maybe like a county welfare office, perhaps, and a church where even the pastor is like, yeah, I'm going to stand out here and get interviewed in my Call of Duty t-shirt.
Yeah.
So weird. And what's her name? Who's on the one-on-one date? Like, he keeps telling her about like, and here's where this happened, and here's where that happened. And she's like, oh, let's go see it. And he's like, nope, closed. And she's slowly starting to panic.
She looked terrified.
Oh my God.
As well, she should have, like, an actual tumbleweed, like, bounced through, like, with his thumb out in the background. I was like, girl, it's okay to not want to do this. Doesn't make you a snob. You're just not going to see anybody you're not married to for 2 weeks at a time.
I had a fantasy that all the women in that van would come back and say, we're out.
That's what I was hoping was going to happen, too. I mean, she, especially her, like, I'm sure you can get a job as a cosmetics developer in, well, not Arlington, okay, not Cedar Rapids, okay, probably not Des Moines. Like, you just are going to be giving up your life if you decide to marry this guy.
Right. And as far as Brit goes, like, the fact that she lists her hometown as Hollywood, by the way, it's not a town.
No.
It's not a town.
No.
It is a part of Los Angeles. It is not a town.
No.
You know, it's like saying that she was from, like, I don't know, Central Park. Like, it's, you know, it's not an actual town.
Yeah.
So it's like she's a waitress in Hollywood. It's like, okay, so that's like the wink from the producers. Mm-hmm. She's an actress.
Oh, of course.
You know?
Right. Yes.
You know?
Fooling
and
no
so,
one.
Like, so that, like, there's no, also, like, Jade, she's from a small town and moved to a bigger town. She's not going to move back to a small town.
No.
She's out. Like, this is really, whoever it's going to be, like, this is, you know, I'm sorry, Chris, you're not going to find love this time around. Sorry. Even Whitney, with her barrage of baby voices, she's a successful fertility doctor in Chicago.
Nurse.
Like, huh? Nurse? Whatever. Same.
She's a blank, blank from Chicago.
Right.
For the purposes of my argument,
yes.
she has a job
yes.
that probably pays a decent amount of money, and she will find nowhere to do that job anywhere.
There's probably a lot of cows that need to be artificially inseminated. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I think they said when they were talking to the pastor that Cedar Rapids is only an hour away.
Phew.
So she could probably get a job there if she felt like driving 2 hours a day.
And if you ever have a hankering for Applebee's, I bet. Hour away. All right. So last thoughts. Who's going to take it?
Oh, God. Who would want it?
No, nobody's going to want it. But it's probably, my feeling is the long shot is Carly, who will take it because she has no self-esteem. In fact, she has a collapsed star as self-esteem.
Yeah.
Like, she has a complete, like, there's a wormhole through her self-esteem.
I don't care if I don't win. I just don't want him to end up with somebody who's fake. It was her whole shtick.
Yeah.
Shtick.
She's like, if this is,
and there's
like,
a couple like that every year.
Jump on the grenade that is, the bad women around me.
No, but I think she's trying to set herself up for the Bachelorette.
Right.
Because she's not going to win. However, she's the one who has the most personality.
Totally.
Like, Brit can't be the Bachelorette. She's a monster.
Yes.
And Jade and what's her face? Caitlin are probably going to be this final two based on what, or maybe Whitney. I don't know.
Jade and Caitlin are different people?
Exactly. Mm. They look exactly the same when they were sitting on
the
couch
together.
They really
do. Thank you. I was like, I thought it was two different people and it was just like an alter ego thing because, by the way, they're all wearing the same two lipsticks.
It's true. And the Winona Judd one doesn't have
a really pink lipstick. They love that really, really pink lipstick on
Gross.
This season.
Well, they're all disgusting monsters. Good thing we check back in with them.
Yep.
Hi, Livvy.
Hi, Mom.
We just finished watching season 8, episode 5 of Face Off.
I can't believe we're already there.
I know. So, what was the first challenge today?
Today they did claws as inspiration. Is that how you say it?
Inspiration.
Inspiration for doing characters, teams of three.
So they had different kinds of claws and everybody made different makeup.
Yep, depending on the claws.
Right. And,
and the winner of that was Adam. He chose the wig for an ice princess.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, that just made him win. And for winning, he got an opportunity. He didn't get eliminated no matter what. He wasn't allowed to get eliminated.
Do you remember what that's called?
No.
Immunity.
Immunity.
Somebody has some sugar before this
one. I was going to say, big stick.
And then they had their spotlight challenge, the regular challenge. And what happened in that one? What did they have to do?
They had to make things, make characters depending on the sound that they would get.
Right. There was a sound effect guy who came in and made special sound effects. And then they all had to
make the thingies.
Make the character based on the sound effect.
Okay.
And which was your favorite look?
It was Jamie and Emily.
What did they make?
And I also like Stephanie and Kelly. So Jamie and Emily made prehistory bird creature.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephanie and Kelly made a clockwork protection.
Porcelain?
Porcelain doll.
Mm-hmm. And
if you're asking, what do I mean by clockwork porcelain doll? The backstory was the clockmaker's wife died and he couldn't live without her. So he made a clock doll that looked just like her and it really helped him out.
It helped the clock guy.
Yeah, and she also was holding a picture of them when she was still alive with him.
It was a nice one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They won, didn't they?
Yes.
Who was your least favorite this week?
Anthony and Darla.
And your favorite person? Your favorite person who's still in the show?
Emily.
Still Emily, me too. And what did she do this week that's just like every other week?
She made fancy hair.
Yes. Even though it was a bird, it was like bird hair.
Yeah, it was porcupine quills.
Oh, is that what it reminded you of?
Yeah, like quills, like bird feathers shape of quills
mm-hmm.
that are kind of pointy at the end, maybe, to protect himself. Or maybe it just looks like that so that animal has quills to stay away from it.
Oh, I see. Okay, let's do something fun. You make a noise, and I'm going to tell you what my sculpture, my character would look okay. like.
Let me see.
That kind of sounds like a pig and a cat decided to have a baby, and then when the cat pig was born, it was super mean because people weren't very nice to it. And it became a bully. Okay, my turn. I'm going to make a noise, and you have to describe what you think it is. Ready?
Okay.
That a girl.
It reminds me my sister having fun with our uncle, with our grandparent, with our grandpa.
Uh-huh. But what would the creature look like?
It would look like a pig sort of thing that farts a lot. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Liv.
You're welcome.
Nailed it.
Yep, I think so. All right, it's time to go around the dial. Let's start with Tara.
Oh my God, you guys. This week, NBC premiered my new favorite show of 2015, which is The Slap. So good. So good slash terrible. As I described in my post about it, it's like the new Smash in every way, in the sense that they think they're making something super important and serious. And in fact, it's a instant camp classic of unmet expectations. It's so ridiculous. This is the story of this sort of extended family has a birthday party, and at the party, someone's shitty kid is kicking off, and his parents are, you know, Brooklyn non-paying attentioners. So someone else, Zachary Quinto, has to step in and take the bat away from the kid and then smacks him across the face to stop him having a shit fit. Exactly. And this kicks off a firestorm that threatens to set all of Brooklyn ablaze, and it's amazing. I wish if you liked Smash for how terrible and yet awesome it was, I really recommend it. It's delightful, and episode 2 is just as good. Slight spoiler, the Zachary Quinto character goes over to try and apologize to the parents of the kid that he smacked the shit out of, who totally deserved it. And when he goes over, the mom is breastfeeding the kid, even though the kid is like at least 4 years old, minimum 4 years old.
Nice.
So it's like the perfect, it's the perfect moment to capture like exactly why this kid needed to get slapped in the first place and probably should get slapped many more times. The slap.
Is that it for you, Tara?
Yes.
Okay, Jeff. And Jeff, sorry, yes. Tara had two things listed in the document.
Oh, so did I? What was the other?
Doesn't matter, Jeff.
Okay.
I have two things that we have 4 year old. We don't watch a lot of TV other than the TV I have to write about. But I just wanted to tell everybody, if you're not on board with Broad City,
mm-hmm. yeah,
you have to get on board this season because it is amazing. And if you can watch the Wisdom Teeth episode and not and your pants remain dry, like you need to get out of my circle of friends, because it is absolutely one of the most amazing pieces of television. That, and we finally started watching Transparent.
Oh yeah.
Which we had not watched. And I would say this, first of all, I was surprised it wasn't an hour long. I was expecting mm-hmm. it to be an hour long. It also was a lot of things I wasn't expecting it to be. I was totally expecting Jeffrey Tambor to be as amazing as he is, and he is, and we're only about halfway into it right now. It is a little bit like white people problems surrounding it, and in some ways it reminds me just of what I've heard of The Slap, because I haven't seen it, where it's like everybody has secrets.
Oh, yeah.
But that said, like, I've found it like incredibly compelling, and like we're like, oh, we'll just watch one episode, and we watch four in a row. So honestly – Take some time out. And it does also like make you go, oh, I've never really thought about this issue before. And that kind of sucks for people who discover this about themselves or like have known this and decide to make this change late. Like it's a really, you know, I don't want to say important, because I think that sort of overemphasizes it. But I think it does like put that in your mind where you can like, oh, I'd never thought about that.
Well, it's one of those, we talked about on the show before about, you know, how we enjoy shows set in worlds we know nothing about, but at the same time, the show is sort of instructional and informative while it does everything else a TV show does. And I think this sort of falls in that category. I mean, it's a little bit different than, say, you know, the inner machinations of the mob or something in a show. But, you know, it has similarities, too. And I think that's what can be appealing about it and sort of makes it feel, important, you know, in the way that you're kind of explaining.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right. Sarah.
Hello. I was going to talk about HBO's documentaries, and in particular that they have bundled all their true crime documentaries together for ease of watching, or in the case of this correspondent, rewatching. Mm-hmm. And I just watched Valentine Road last night. It's about the murder of a trans middle schooler in Oxnard, California. It is not a pick-me-up, but it's very good. And if you like crime documentaries, it's gripping. But actually, I would like to take a minute to talk about PBS's documentary programming, like POV and Independent Lens, which is like slowly getting marginalized to like 2 a.m, or they're putting stuff on at Thursday at 6, because things like Downton Abbey, which is great, or Great British Baking Show, which ditto, do better in Sunday primetime. And these are big sources of, you know, documentary distribution and funding. So I would like to urge everyone who likes this format to A, find it on the schedule and set a DVR pass for it if you like documentaries, and B, tell your local PBS affiliate to hold on to these programming blocks because they're pretty important and they do have Oscar-winning documentaries as part of the programming. And I've seen a lot of amazing movies that I wouldn't have seen otherwise through them. And yay, PBS.
Yeah, Independent Lens is another one.
Did I not say that?
Did you? Sorry.
Yeah.
Also, I think we forgot to say it while we were talking about The Jinx the other week. And since you touched on true crime, Sarah, you have a blog that's all about that I don't think you mentioned last time. You should pitch that out.
Oh, sure. It's called The Blotter, the-blotter.com. And I review all kinds of true crime media. Please visit it and please pitch me on stuff that you'd like to review if you would like to do that. We'd love to keep the conversation going over there.
Telling the truth isn't gonna be easy.
Glass everywhere you look. Who broke my window?
Why is my stomach all nervous and queasy?
Aha, some kids more. Who could the little culprit be? Who threw this ball? Did someone see?
He's so mad, I'm really scared.
Kids these days, they don't care.
Mr. Robertson.
What a horrible mess.
I broke your window with my ball.
You?
And I've come to confess.
You knew I'd be angry.
Yes.
Aren't you afraid?
Yes.
You'll have to pay for this mess you've made, but I'm proud of you, child, for you have displayed honor. The stuff from which heroes are made.
I told the truth.
From the morning, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
It's time for the canon, and today's canon comes from Pasquale Rumo. He gets an extra credit redeemable for an extra hot great topic of his choosing. This was submitted almost a year ago, so if you submit something and you seem to fall into a black hole, perhaps it has not. Sometimes it just takes us a while to find the right mix of lazy guest and right show. Just joking. Anyway,
that
so
hurt.
We're going to
really hurt.
No, I'm sorry, Jeff. I couldn't resist. So let's throw it to his submission. Here we go.
Hi, Extra Hot Great. Love you guys. Today I'm nominating an episode of Fringe for the canon. It's episode 1 from season 5, Transilians Thought Unifier, Model 11. At the end of last season, we saw the Observers take over Manhattan in the year 2015, forcing the team to amber themselves. Then the viewers were brought to the future, where Peter and Olivia's daughter located and freed the ambered bodies of Walter and Peter. In the current episode, Walter and company are trying to locate the body of Olivia, which was ambered holding the Transilians Thought Unifier, Model 11. This device is critical for defeating the Observers. Basically, the separate parts of a plan to defeat the Observers have been scrambled in Walter's mind, and this device will unify them. So the team goes to the black market to get information about Olivia's whereabouts and find out she's been purchased. They track down this person who purchased her and find out it's the creepy bookstore owner from previous seasons of Fringe. He's using Olivia as a coffee table, and he tells the team that he's doing this because he loves her, and it's a very creepy moment.
It's not supposed to happen this way. She's supposed to wake up and see me as her savior. When I figure out exactly how to wake her up.
But the Observers show up based on a tip, and the team is able to escape, with the exception of Walter, who's captured by the Observers. Back at their hideout, Peter frees Olivia, who reunites with her much older daughter in a very touching mother-daughter moment.
Last time I saw you, you were 3 years old. Now this time I thought it was 4. No, you were 3 years. 1 month. And 5 days.
But right after this moment, we see Walter being violently interrogated by Windmark, the head honcho Observer, who finds out that Walter has fragmented his thoughts. Meanwhile, we find out the Rebels have developed new tech to make humans appear dead, which Etta uses to sneak Peter and Olivia into Observer headquarters, where they rescue and escape with the broken Walter. Back at the hideout, the team finds out that the device doesn't work after all, and that Walter's memories of the plan are likely gone and his mind is truly effed up. At the end of the episode, Walter is lying in bed and sees a reflection on his wall. So he heads outside and finds a bizarre CD art arrangement thing. He digs up a burned CD and plays it in an abandoned taxicab, and we hear Only You by Yaz. This moment was beautiful, sad, and uplifting all at once, and gave me serious goosebumps the first time I saw it. It was the best moment of the episode and probably one of the best moments of the series overall. But overall, I chose this episode because it highlights Walter Bishop, the central character of the show, in my opinion, and the acting skills of John Noble. It shows both the hopelessness of his mental illness as well as a sliver of hope found in a Yaz song of all places. I also enjoyed the quirkier moments of the episode, like how Naugahyde is no longer a word, people are eating these bizarre egg sticks, and a handful of walnuts are worth $3,000. Overall, the tone of the episode is consistent with the strangeness of the series overall, and it's the reason I loved it. I hope you guys like it too. Bye.
All right. Thank you very much. I will say this about this episode. I admire the showrunner's balls trying to pull this off. I know it's not their fault. Fox ordered a 11th hour renewal for next season after they pretty much mapped the end of the series out. They sort of had a transitional episode at the end of season four, building into this extra story. Yeah. It almost seems like one of those comic books, you know, the whole season seems like one of those like Buffy season, whatever, you know, comic book that they did after the show ended.
Yeah.
It's right. Not great. This season sort of like, you know, Fringe was such a solid show. I know some people say season four was sort of on the downswing. I thought it was pretty solid all the way up to season five. This certainly was ambitious, but I feel this whole season and this episode included kind of falls short of the rest of the series. There's certainly many, many, many better episodes I think you can choose from for the series. A little John Noble goes a long way. I don't mean that as that I don't like an episode that's all him. I'm just saying he's so good that I think he elevates even stinker episodes like this to something that you would want to watch. Like, nobody has watery, teary eyes like John Noble. Whenever that happens, you just like kind of want to like hop on a plane, find out where he is, give him a big hug, ask him to be your dad.
Yeah.
You know, like he was like, I feel like he was just born to play Walter, you know, and then, you know, that was what the universe had in store for him, because it's such a perfect match. And I just kind of wish the series could have ended where they wanted it to, and it didn't end up being a victim of, you know, some Fox executives, you know, timetabling issues, you know, or whatever really happened. The one plus that is an aside and does not enter into canon judgment for me is that I get the feeling that a lot of people on this show sort of left after season four, and season five saw the ascendancy of the guy who would later on become the showrunner for Almost Human, the best worst show ever on television. His name is like
J.H. Wyman, I think.
Wyman, thank you. And this was sort of his, I get the feeling of this, he had a lot to do with this season. And Almost Human with Carl Urban and his robot buddy is a terrible, terrible show that I wish was still on. I would trade so many episodes of the season of Fringe for just one more minute of Almost Human. It's so bad. An audacious submission. And Gordon Lightfoot's barking. I'm going to pass it on as I look to see why my dog is barking.
Yeah, this was not my jam either at all. I was, when I looked at when we picked it and I saw what episode it was, I was like, well, maybe I'm remembering it more pessimistically than I recall it. But I actually just did a Fringe marathon diary this summer, and this was not my favorite stretch of episodes. I agree with Dave that it should have ended at the end of season four. He's right. Pascal is right that the Walter moment at the end with that great Yaz song, and the moment where he's sitting in the car and he's finally gotten to hear some music, which is all he's wanted to do for the whole episode, waking up in this horrible future. And then he looks out and there's, you know, this glimmer of hope in the form of a dandelion poking through the stones. Like, it's sort of a cliche, but it also kind of works for the reason Dave says that, you know, John Noble is so, so good. But, yeah, I hated the season so much. I did not want to see this story. I don't care about grown-up Etta. Most of this did not work for me at all and is not the best of Fringe, in my opinion. Sarah?
Yeah, It's funny because I definitely know how Fringe can sort of grab you around the heart at these random moments.
Yeah.
Kind of like Gordon does. And so I get, like, I was watching this and I was like, I don't understand really why this was picked. Like, it's like a lot of season premieres. It's really a lot of table setting. Once you know what the table's going to look like, which we do. I will give the casting department credit for casting Georgina Haig, who is absolutely the most, like, you couldn't have grown her in a lab to look more like their kid.
True.
Unfortunately, she also inherited some of Anna Torv's more underplaying aspects in the acting department. And I actually don't mind Anna Torv's acting. I thought she was always fine and took more shit than she should have. But
Georgina, I will give her shit, like, for her Leonard Nimoy impression till the day I die. Everybody loves that. I hate it. Flibbity flu.
Sarah, you were saying.
I was. That's fair. But that sort of goes back to my point. Like, Fringe has these very, like, causes these very subjective and strong reactions. But with that said, and I totally am on board with Dave's observations about John Noble elevating the material. John Noble is one of my two, my dad's two famous twins.
Right. Yeah.
The other being Elliot Gould. But there are so many better exemplars of that, I feel, that are also amazing episodes. Like, I think it's the season two finale where you can tell from the shape of the window that they're going to pan out from the World Trade Center.
I think that's season one, isn't it? Isn't that the
Could
end of
be season
one?
Might be. I feel like it's season two because season one kind of didn't, I'm not sure it pulled it together with that. Yeah, anyway, regardless, they pan out, there's the building, and there was something going on in that episode with John Noble being sort of like very dadly, and they did that pan out and I was just like, wow. And then burst into tears.
Yeah.
So Fringe can do that to you. And I'm not judging anyone for whom this episode did that, but it didn't do it for me at all. And I think there were at least half a dozen better, more canonable episodes. So I didn't dislike this as much as I remembered, but it's, not canon for me. Jeff.
Well, I'm coming from a totally different perspective, having watched, I think I watched a couple of Fringe episodes at the beginning and then haven't watched it ever since. So I was surprised to find out there were five seasons of it, quite frankly. And so I was like, okay, well, I kind of know who the characters are and kind of what they are about. So I was sort of like, I found this a compelling episode, not putting it into the, you know, into context of Fringe as a whole, or like, is this a great episode of Fringe? Cause I don't have anything to sort of judge that by. But still, you know, so I found it easy to watch cause I was like, oh, what's going to happen? And like, how is this going to wrap up and blah, 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 and all of that. And yeah, I mean, you know, John Noble? Mm-hmm. Yeah, John Noble. He's very good in this, and I'm sure there are other times that he's very good. And I remembered like watching the episodes that I watched and being like really enjoying his portrayal and everything, so much more so than Joshua Jackson, who I find a little hard to take. I just don't believe him as a person who's not an actor.
Yes.
I guess is it, you know. But, and even though, like, I think the ending kind of works, I was sort of like, of course it's a flower that comes up through the pavement that is the ray of hope, you know? And I was like, that's a little corny for me. I mean, as much as I love that Yaz song, and I do, you know, I thought that was an unexpected song for me at that point, you know? And so I thought that was a decent move, but like this didn't feel like to me, like if this is the best the show has to offer, then I definitely don't need to go watch the show. And so, you know, cause I thought not that it was bad, just that like,
but
oh,
it didn't
well,
make
I mean,
you want to watch more.
No, I sort of wanted, I was sort of disappointed that like, oh, it's obvious. This is where now the whole season's going to be about trying to put together this puzzle from his head.
Yeah.
And it's like, I was sort of hoping they would put it together and then you have to deal with the consequences of that instead of like, oh, okay, now go out and find a bucket.
Yep.
And right. Now go yes. out and find a pointy hat.
Yep.
And now,
yeah, it was like playing, exactly like that.
Yeah, the Secret of Monkey Island or something like
God,
that.
God, I had to hear about Amber one more goddamn time.
Yeah, and also it's kind of funny. The song at the end also is in the next episode of The Americans we were watching. So,
funny.
Yeah, kind of funny coincidence. So, all right, I think we can put this to a vote. Sarah?
Please resubmit with another Fringe episode, but for this one, no. Sorry.
Jeffrey?
Yeah, sorry. I appreciate the effort, but it didn't do it for me, no.
All right. Tartholomew?
Adding what I didn't say before, which is, let's acknowledge that the observers had some good ideas. This is a no for me, too.
What were those good ideas?
You know, humans are mostly garbage.
All right.
Let's start with that.
I'm going to say no to that and to this episode. And that's, unfortunately, that's unanimous. It's... Fringe, Season 5, Episode 1, Transilience Through Unifier, Model 11. Sorry, you are not inducted into the Extra Hockey Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, everybody, it's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Today's winner is the terrorists.
Yes.
Terrorists who killed off ISIS.
Oh, yes.
From Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
Aww. The people that are involved in Downton Abbey can say all they want on blogs and in public that the ascendancy of ISIS, which has since actually been now is officially ISIL, I believe, or IS, is the Islamic State terrorist organization.
Yeah.
Anyways, but it started off as ISIS. They killed off ISIS on Archer, and now they've killed off ISIS on Downton Abbey. God damn it. They can say that Noah had nothing to do with it, but you know it did. Yeah. I'm looking at you fellows, you dick.
Yep.
The terrorists have won. Tara, loser of the week.
Loser of the week, well, there's two. One is society for having to suffer through another round of who should host Late Night Show X because host is leaving, because Jon Stewart is leaving The Daily Show. And why now? Why not 10 years ago? I know, I agree. But the real loser is once again Brian Williams, because now,
boy.
After last week, remember last week when he was the loser? We were so young and innocent. Now they're poking holes in way more of his reporting. Mm-hmm. In addition to they're conducting an investigation into basically everything he's ever done. And in the interim, he's been suspended without pay for 6 months. So that's not great for him.
Have fun on Fox News.
I hope not. That would be surprising yet unsurprising.
Yeah, but then all the Fox TV shows that he would pop in and be, you know, little comedy bits he would like to do.
There's Brian Williams this week on Backstrom.
Interesting question that brings up.
Yes.
Which is this. Do you guys know what time it is?
Maybe. Time to unify our thoughts?
Yes. In game form. It's game time.
Yay!
All right, everybody. This is the seventh game time of the season. It's all tied up top with value.
Lucky number seven.
Valued guests and Tara, 3 points each. Sarah has 1 point. Today we are playing Partners and Other Strangers from Alan Sepinwall, who earns himself an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. I'll let Alan explain. This is a test of how well you remember the less famous partners or sidekicks of some of TV's most famous criminal investigators.
Ooh.
Some of them were just always in the background, while others were late replacements for more beloved sidekicks. You'll be given the name of the lesser partner, and if you can give the name of either the more famous partner or the show they were on, and sometimes that is the same thing, you get 2 points.
Okay.
If you need a hint, you'll get the name of the actor who played the lesser partner, and then an answer, 1 point. For example, if I were to say John Watson, you could either say Sherlock or Sherlock Holmes for 2 points.
Okay.
If you needed a clue, I would tell you it was Martin Freeman who played him.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yes.
All right. Yes. Let's throw it to Piggy.
We will start with Tara.
All right. So let's go Tara. and then off to Jeff, and then to Sarah in New York.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Are we ready to play Partners and Other Strangers?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yes. Tara.
Yep.
Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
Amanda Rollins.
Rollins?
Rollins.
Law and Order Special Victims Unit.
That's good for 2 points. Jeff.
Yes.
Tim Gutterson. Tim Gutterson.
Oh, boy.
The hint would be the actor who plays him.
Yeah, let me take the hint.
Okay, the actor is Jacob Pitts. Tim Gutterson as played by Jacob Pitts.
Oh, God. Let's say Monk.
Nice guess.
That is Justified. Tim Gutterson from Justified. Sure. He's the other good-looking fellow.
Right.
From Justified, right. Who I believe we wanted...
The tiny pocket-sized one.
Yeah, that we wanted a spin-off of.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, Sarah, here's yours. Alexandria Ames.
Alexandria. You mean Ames?
Ames, Ames, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, Ames.
Law and Order Criminal Intent.
That's good for 2. Thank you, Picky, says Sarah. Wallace Fennell. Wallace Fennell, Tara.
Veronica Mars.
2 points. Jeff.
Yes.
John Clark. John Clark.
John Narek.
I'll go ahead and take a hint.
Mark Paul Gosselaar.
Oh, boy.
He was the partner on what show?
Would this be the Bastard Squad?
I wish it was.
God damn
My
it.
My goodness.
No.
The better known partner was Andy Sipowicz from NYPD Blue.
Oh. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. I feel like that's what it was called in the UK.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Charlie Francis.
Charlie Francis. I will need a hint.
Oh, great. Kirk Acevedo?
Acevedo?
Acevedo? Yep.
Oh, yeah. Fringe.
1 point.
Nice.
Yep. All right. Dan Williams.
Hint.
A double hint.
Oh.
Actors who have played Dan Williams include James MacArthur and Scott Conn.
Oh, Hawaii 5-0.
Stop laughing. When Dave mispronounces stuff.
Can.
Dave I love can, that James
but Scott can.
All right,
different
everybody.
Strokes.
Different strokes. All right. Justin Ripley for Jeff. Justin Ripley.
I'm going to need a hint.
Warren Brown. You don't know it. That's probably not going to help you.
Huh. Is it investigating cops on patrol?
Is it?
So close.
That is his partner was John Luther from the show.
Oh, Luther.
Sure. Oh. If you haven't caught on yet, this is not my wheelhouse. Just saying. Just throwing it out there.
Okay. Bringing us into our score break for Sarah.
Yes.
Bobby Crocker. His wife Betty.
Yes.
Was his partner.
Could I have a hint,
in
please?
Cooking crime to a reduction. Okay, it is Dobson. Kevin Dobson played Bobby Crocker.
Huh.
Kevin Dobson?
Yeah.
Law and Order UK?
Good guess.
Incorrect, but here's the first character. First name of this character is Theo. I did not know this. Last name, Kojak. Theo Kojak.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Huh.
All right, we're 1/3 through our game.
All right, Sarah has 3 points, I have 5 points, Jeff looking to get on the board.
Okay.
Yes! Here I come!
All right.
With the confidence of an Aaron Sorkin's ego, Jeff is looking to get on the board.
Tara.
Yes.
John J. Wilson.
Hint.
Bob Dishy. Bob Dishy.
Dragnet.
Ooh, that is a good guess. Columbo.
Oh.
All right, Jeffrey.
Yes.
Bill Gannon.
Bill Gannon. I'm going to go with a real with a real show this time.
Okay.
And Gas Wildly with Mannix.
Played by Harry Morgan. The character's named Joe Friday from Dragnet. All right. Sarah. Vince Romano.
Romano, probably.
Yeah, probably.
Let's call the whole thing off. Vince Romano.
Yeah.
Vince Romano.
Vince Romano fighting crime.
With songs.
Yeah.
Hint?
Played by Adrian Zemed. There's only one possible answer. Yeah.
TJ Hooker.
That is the character and the show. And good for one point.
Nice.
All right.
So mad.
sorry, whose turn is this?
Me, okay.
Warren Ferguson.
Warren Ferguson, hint.
Jack Burns. I was saying Boo-erns.
Dr. Jack Burns.
Jack Burns, fighting crime. Who's his partner and what is the show?
Matt Houston.
Andy Taylor, The Andy Griffith Show.
Oh, okay.
All right.
That
this
Duran
is
Duran
for
show?
Jeffrey. Jeffrey?
Yes.
Dee Dee McCall. Dee Dee McCall.
Dee Dee McCall. Okay, I will take a hint.
Stephanie Kramer played Dee Dee McCall.
Why are you saying it like that?
Don't you remember?
Catherine is freaking out right now.
Dee Dee McCall. This is from Frisky Dingo.
Oh, sure.
Feather and Father.
Partner Rick Hunter, show Hunter.
Oh, sure.
Dee Dee McCall.
Hardly even know her.
Okay, Sarah.
Yep.
Sam Fujiyama. Sam Fujiyama.
Oh. Damn it. Damn it. Hint.
Robert Ito.
And the Dancing Itos?
Yep.
Oh, that's an old, old joke. Barney Miller.
That was my first thought. My second thought was Quincy.
He's totally Japanese. Correct. It was Quincy. All right, back to Tara.
Yes, sir.
Nancy Teagler. Teager, sorry. Teager, just Teager.
Jesus Christ, hint.
Teager. All right. It's written as Trailer Howard, but
that's correct.
Is it correct?
Correct.
Okay.
This is
it's actually Natalie Teager.
Oh, okay.
What'd I say?
Nancy.
Did I?
But it wouldn't have helped me. The hint is what helped me.
Oh,
and
my God. It's so fucked up today, guys.
It's Monk.
It is Monk.
It is.
Number 17.
Spreadingle.
Yes.
Spreadingle.
John Baker.
Is this for me?
Yep.
Yes.
Oh.
As the edge creeps into his voice.
Is this for me?
So excited. John Baker?
That would be Larry Wilcox.
Oh.
That's pronounced Wilcox.
I'll say Chips.
You would be correct for one point.
Yay!
All right.
Yeah, in your face, people who didn't think I would get a point.
All right.
Including me.
Second score break after this one. This is for Sarah? Yeah. Stephanie... In quotes, Steve Oskowski. Oskowski. Oskowski.
I should know this, but I don't without a hint.
Tracy Nelson. Actor is Tracy Nelson.
Tracy Nelson. Shit.
This is a tough one.
Tracy Nelson. Looking exactly like Jerry Seinfeld fame.
The Father Dowling Mysteries.
Yeah.
He was sidekick to Father Dowling.
Sure.
Also known as Sister Steve, I believe.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Score break time, people.
Jeff has one.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah
way
has
to go, Jeff. Way to go. Let's give Jeff a round. Okay.
I'm not going to join in your condescending applause, Dave. Jeff has one, Sarah has four, I have six.
Okay.
Very, very close games.
And now we're back to Tara, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Ed Hocken.
Hint.
Ellen North.
North.
Do you know who Alan North is?
He's the skipper, right?
No, that's Alan.
No.
Hale?
Oh.
Hale. Yes.
And I have no idea.
With a question mark at the end.
What was a crime show from the olden times?
Was the Waltons a police show?
My mom in a car.
That's his partner is Frank Drebin, the show Police Squad.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Jeff.
Yes.
Harry S. Truman.
Harry S. Truman.
Harry S. Truman. Remember, you can give me the show or the partner.
Who played him?
Michael. Help me out here.
Aunt Keen.
Thank you.
Michael Aunt Keen.
Of Slapshot fame, but it's not Slapshot the series.
No, it was The Rookies. What?
Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks. Right.
His partner, Dale Cooper. Thumbs up for that wrong answer. Okay, Sarah. Tim Bayless. Tim Bayless.
Oh, yeah.
Homicide, Life on the Street.
That is good for two. Back to Tara.
Yep. We are now all tied up, by the way.
Nice. And you...
we are?
Yes.
Festus Hagen.
Festus Hagen?
Yeah. Perhaps Hagen. H-A-G-G-E-N.
And
perhaps Philip.
Ken Curtis.
Ken Curtis.
Or Ray Curtis. I'm sorry.
Wise guy.
Gunsmoke.
Okay.
Good Gunsmoke. Guess.
Gunsmoke. All right. Jeff.
Yes.
Jeff. Laura Holt.
Laura Holt, played by whom, please?
Stephanie Zimbalist.
Oh.
Yeah. Only one thing she was ever in. What was it?
Oh, there's another one.
Okay, there's two. But this is the one you're thinking of.
Yeah.
It was,
Wait, I got another hint for you. Show and character, same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Stephanie Zimbalist was in Remington Steel.
Yeah.
That's good for one point. All right. Sarah.
Yep.
Monica Reyes.
Reyes, probably.
Yeah, Reyes?
Okay. Probably.
Yeah, probably. R-E-Y-E-S.
Hint.
Annabeth Gish.
Oh, right. Yeah. X-Files.
X-Files is correct. Okay, so now it is Tara's turn, right?
Yes.
Okay, Tara. Did I miss one here?
I don't know.
Do we start with you, Tara?
Yes.
Okay. I think I missed one. All right.
Okay.
Now and then I am ahead. It doesn't mean you missed a question.
Okay. Tara.
Yeah.
James Trivette.
Trivette?
Trivette. Could be. T-R-I-V-E-T-T-E.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably Trivette. Hint.
Clarence Gilliard.
Clarence Gilliard.
Are you sure it's not Lawrence?
Are you sure it's not Williams?
It's not III? Nancy.
I don't know.
Oh, God.
Not Mod Squad.
I don't like this. God, me. Walker, colon.
Oh.
Texas Ranger.
Got it.
Oh, it really wasn't.
Sure.
Okay, sorry.
Okay. Now we're on to Jeff.
Yes.
Yes.
Ricardo Tubbs.
Oh. I don't need a hint for this one because it's Miami Vice.
It is.
It is. And Sarah,
yes.
Your last. Martin Hart. Martin Hart.
Oh, to take the hint or to guess?
Well, let's go. Let's find the scores.
Oh, well, Jeff has 4. I have Woo! 6. Sarah has 7. This is the last question?
Yeah.
So Sarah's already won, no matter what happens.
So go for the gusto.
Heart to heart?
That's what I would have said.
Actor, Woody Harrelson.
Oh, duh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Tell the good people at home.
True Detective.
Thank you. All right. So
she wants
Sarah
the
won.
Trudy. Yeah, Sarah won.
Sarah. I'm sad that I didn't get to use my... my last make-believe show.
Which was?
The Justice Eaters.
All right. That's it for another episode of The Justice Eaters in color. We sampled the finale of Top Chef and speed dated The Bachelor before Liv chimed in with her 5th face-off report of the season. We went around the dial with stops at the slap. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff's thing, which was transparent and what was the other one?
Broad City.
Broad City.
Yeah. And Sarah's documentary catch-up. And the 80s morality tale from the Church of Latter-day Saints. And we altered space and time to make sure Fringe's season 5 opener wouldn't make it into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Sarah was the winner of this week's Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole on behalf of Tara Ariano.
There isn't even a restaurant.
Sarah D. Blunting.
I'm really feeling a connection with you, Dave.
And Jeff Druk.
I'm going to tell Chris the truth about Brit.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Good God. What's that?
It's an egg stick.
What a miserable future.